We'll make use of a little parsha in Chumash, and then from that we will get to our lesson. So you have a woman named Sarai, and Sarai unfortunately is unable to have children. So she takes a shifcha. That's what they used to do in the olden days. You take yourself a maidservant, and then the maidservant has children, and they're considered yours, the wives. And she gives her to Avram Avinu. And then Avram Avinu has Bia with Hagar. And then on the first try, she gets pregnant. That's what Rashi says. On the first try, Avram and Hagar are together, and she gets pregnant. And Vatekal Gvirta Beinah. Now Sarai, Hagar starts treating Sarai with a little bit of a lack of respect. She's light in her eyes. Sarai gets very upset. She says to Avram Avinu, Chamasi Alecha. She's angry at him. Dinli Allah Chunkula says, Chamas Asuili, what's being done to me, this injustice that's being done to me is your fault. I gave you a shivcha. She saw that she got pregnant. How long were they married at this time? 10 years. In other words, we've been trying for 10 years. No luck. And she got it already. Ve'ikaveinea. And now I'm lighting her eyes. Yishvar Hashem b'ni u'v'incha, u'v'necha. So God should judge between us. Okay? The pasuk continues, Ve'omer Avram el Sarai, Hinei shivcha sech b'yodeh. He said, listen, Avram Avinu doesn't get involved. He said, listen, she's your shivcha. Asira atok b'neich, do whatever you want with her. Abraham was a man of peace. Vate'anea Sarah, Vativrach miponeha. Sarah, Vate'anea, what does Vate'anea mean? What? Tortured her, afflicted her, right? And she runs away. Okay? It's interesting. Shalom the Ramban here is Ramban. One thing about Jewish history as opposed to all other histories is that we told the truth. And we don't like to make our heroes look good on every occasion. So even though the Pasuk doesn't say she sinned, but the Ramban says she sinned. Ramban says Sarai sinned by mistreating Hagar. And because of that, to this day, we suffer. To this day, on my way to yeshiva, I had to suffer walking by some of our cousins who I know don't like me. Okay? So we have to suffer from the upon Arabs avenging what Sarai did to Yishmael. Okay, that's the Ramban. But we're going to stick now just in the words of the Pasuk. So she afflicts her, and she runs away. Then Amalek finds her, right, at the well in the desert, and he says, where are you and where are you going? He says to Hagar, and she answers, I'm running away from my master Sarai. And the Malach says to her, return to your mistress. This, that's how we started this year, with mistresses. V'hisani tachas yodeho. And how would you translate Visani? Be tortured, thank you, Yoel. Under her hand. Now, this is pointed out by Rip's wife. Very interesting insight. You look at Onkelos, the first time it says Vate'anea, she afflicted her, it says Va'anisa. What's Va'anisa? Like Inui. What's Inui on Yom Kippur? Has anyone ever been to Yom Kippur for Shabbos? This year I was in Yom Kippur for Shabbos. You got it. Okay. Get Abi. I was at Yom Kippur for Shabbos. Okay. Because Yom Kippur fell out on Shabbos. So for Shabbos, I was at Yom Kippur. Okay. Afflicted her. Now, if you look in the same Onkelos, the second time, when the Malach says, go back to her, what does Onkelos say? V'ishtabdi. He changes it. He doesn't say, V'anisa. Be afflicted. He says, Vishabdi. What's Vishabdi? Has anyone ever learned, let's say, Maseches Ksuvis? No takers. I guess all day long, you just wait for the shiur. You don't do anything in the morning. Wow. How flattering. But what do you do every other day of the week? The Meshibud is subordinated. Right. It means like a lien. You have a Shibud on a property. It's a lien on a property. Meaning this property is sort of bound to you, if you have a Shibud on a property. To be meshuvah to somebody else, that's an eved, right? He's an eved, right? So if you have an eved, l'sha'abed. To make somebody into an eved is l'sha'abed. Okay? You have that in Hebrew sometimes where you take the shin, and it like strengthens it. Like for example, to double something in modern Hebrew, they say l'shachpel, or l'shachzer. There's a lot of l'shach, but this is not old times. This is how to be happy in marriage. So that is l'sha'abed. So go be subordinate to her. Okay? So again, the first time Nisani means be tortured by her, be afflicted by her. And the second time, Mungula says, when the Malach speaks to her, what does it mean? Be subordinate to her. So what's the storyline over here? You have Hagar. And Hagar is Avram's maidservant. What happens? She gets pregnant. So when she's pregnant, and Sarai is not pregnant, what does that tell Hagar about Hagar? HS. She's hot stuff. Sarai can't get pregnant. Sarai is a nothing wife. Excuse me, but what good is she? She can't give birth. Right? What do we need her for? To make lunch? For lunch, you can get a Filipino to make lunch. For that, you don't need a wife. You want a wife, you want to have babies. Okay, obviously, wives are for other things, but one of the primary reasons we want wives is for babies. You can't have wives without babies. You can't have babies without wives. You can't have babies without wives. You're right. You want both. You want them to come together. And not only that, but it's great. She also comes, not only does she have the baby, and then afterwards, her body miraculously creates food to feed the baby until the baby's old enough to eat on its own, which is miraculous. Good. So she now feels like she's hot stuff. And Sarai is now second class because she can't have a baby. That's the way Hagar feels. So how does Hagar start treating Sarai? What does that take away now? She doesn't go up to her and say, Sarai, you're worthless. You know what she says to her? She says, Sarai, now we're equal. We're on equal footing. I'm Hagar the pregnant, the maidservant. On one hand, I'm a maidservant, so I'm one down. On the other hand, I'm pregnant, so I'm one up. You're Sarai the wife, so you're one up. On the other hand, you're Sarai the barren, so you're one down. So one up and one down equals zero, right? And one down and one up, well, one, right? And one down, depends how you look at it. But either way, let's say you're starting at one, and then you go down, and then you go up, so you're at one, okay? And if you're starting at one, and you go up, and then you go down, then you're also at one. So Hagar has an up and a down, and Sarai has an up and a down, so now we're on the same level, right? That's how Hagar is treating Sarai. You following? Hagar is treating Sarai on the same level because she has one up on Sarai. Sarai has one up on her. So they're now equal. It's Gebalt. Good. So now they're on equal footing. How does Sarai feel towards Hagar? Yeah. She's my maidservant. Anyone ever had a maidservant? Is that you, Moshe? You said that? Oh, no. How do you feel towards your maidservant? Like a maidservant, like a shifcha. So Sarai is treating her like a shifcha. How does Hagar feel towards Sarai? Equal footing. Now, if you're on equal footing with somebody, and they treat you as a subordinate, how do you feel? Mistreated. So if your boss treats you like an employee, you have no problem with that, because he's your boss. But if your friend treats you like an employee, you have a problem with that, because he's your friend. Right? Like, I have no problem when my wife calls me by my first name. But when my children call me by my first name, I have a very serious problem with them, because we have a different type of relationship. So when Sarai is treated like an equal by Sarai's friend, the next door neighbor, that's very lovely, but not by Hagar. So Hagar is treating her like an equal. Sarai is treating her like a subordinate. Hagar is expecting to be treated like an equal, right? So if you're expecting to be treated like an equal and you're treated like a subordinate, how do you feel? You don't know. If you're expected to be treated like an equal, and they're treating you like you're second class, how do you feel?
Okay.
You don't feel good, you feel tortured. She's mistreating you. That's exactly what was going on over here. That's the way Hagar felt. She didn't say anything bad. She was just treating her like you treat your maid. I wasn't treating her badly. I didn't insult her. She didn't say, you know, you're ugly and the veil you're wearing looks funny. Right? Because they used to wear veils. Yes, they wore veils. Probably they wore veils there also. Right? Maybe they went to Colorado, they went skiing with the Bales. Good. So the that is what happened until now. Now the Malach goes up to Hagar, and what does he tell her? You don't remember. You're saying it was 5,000 years ago. It's hard to remember. Yeah, but I just told you this story 20 seconds ago. She says to what? Go back. And v'yisani pachas yadel. And be afflicted by her. Okay? Now, what does Uncle say there? What does afflicted mean? Ishtabit. Be subordinate to her. Meaning, she's not torturing you. She left because she felt tortured. But the Malach is explaining to her, she's not torturing you at all. She's just treating you like a subordinate, like somebody who's under her. Because you are under her. Because you're a maidservant. Forget about the fact that you're pregnant. She's the wife in good standing, and you're just the shivcha. So therefore, behevana mimena. She wants to build through you, but she's still higher than you. So if she's higher than you, so how should you treat her? Treat her like your boss. And then, if you treat her like your boss, Hagar, you will be employed and happy. Why would you be happy? Because now that's what you're expecting. If you're expecting to be treated like a worker, like an employee, and you're treated like an employee, then no problem. If you're expecting to be treated like an equal, and you're treated like an employee, then problem. So what is the yisel, what is the principle that emerges from this story in Chumash?
Always think of yourself as a slave.
Oh, that a person has to have the proper expectations. And then if your expectations are in the right place, then your expectations will be fulfilled. If you have inflated expectations, then you will be, ouch, sorely disappointed. Oh, so how does that relate to marriage? So everybody comes into marriage with expectations. Lots and lots and lots of expectations. And almost everybody is, I would say everybody, but I haven't interviewed everybody yet. Almost everybody is disappointed. Why? Because their expectations aren't fulfilled. Right? When you're standing under the chuppah, what are you expecting? You would ask the guy to fill out the checklist of what he's expecting. He's expecting a lot of things. First of all, when he's with her, he's happy. So he's expecting that for the rest of his life, when he's with her, he's going to be happy. She makes him happy. He's excited to be with her. Anybody ever know a girl that it's fun to be with her? So when you're single, you think, if it's fun to be with her now, then why don't I just spend the rest of my life with her? Then I'll always have fun. That's what you think. But, what happens? I know married people, and they don't always find it so much fun to be with their spouses. So that is that. And it goes for all areas. Let's say you have expectations about children, right? You go into marriage, and you want to have, I mean, you should probably make it clear, not probably, you should discuss this before you get married. What are your expectations as far as children are concerned, right? Some guys want to have 15, and some women are just, that's not their thing. They want to have 3, 4, 5, I'm talking about from girls, 5, maybe 6, but not everybody's up to having 15. Not so, I mean, I've never had one before, but I'm guessing from watching other people that it's not so easy having 15. So she's just, you know, she wants to also have a life of her own. Her whole life just doesn't want to be one long laundry load. You know, women with a lot of children, they just keep going back to the machine again and again and again and again, and they make food. Maybe she wants to have, chas v'shalom, not a career woman, because if you're going out with a woman and you see that her main focus is career, so I don't care anything nice you tell me about her, I'll tell you right now that you should try to set her up with a friend of yours who doesn't learn anyway and isn't so interested in a religious girl. But if you want a girl who's a good girl for you, then I wouldn't even recommend it to your friend and give it to your enemy. I wouldn't recommend it to your enemy. Why should an enemy suffer? You want a woman whose main focus is going to be on the home. Not that she can't have a career. When I say career woman, I mean, what is the focus of her life? Is the focus of her life the most important thing in her life family, or is the most important thing in her life her career? If the most important thing in her life is a career, so I wouldn't curse you with it, and I wouldn't curse my worst enemy with it. Because that's not the way to build a Jewish family. A Jewish family is the woman's main focus is on the family. And again, even if she's a doctor, she can be a doctor, and her main focus in life can be on the family. That also can happen. A doctor's a little bit more complicated, but because, you know, all the years of medical school and And that's, you know, the first few years of marriage usually, and then afterwards. But, you know, let's say she can be, you know, she's a pediatrician or something. So first of all, you get free medical care for your children, which counts for something. And second of all, she can make her hours. So she works 3 times a week, you know, 4 hours in the afternoon. It's not, you know, her main focus is still going to be on the home. And there are women. There are women doctors, sperm women doctors, who, you know, they give birth. Every year they give birth. They take 3 months off, and so they do it that way. They work 9, take off 3. Work 9, take off 3, and they keep having kids. And they help support the family, and they're doing something that's meaningful for them. But if her focus, if the ikkar of her life is on the career, I would run away very, very fast, no matter how much you like her, because that's not good for our families. In any event, that is as far as that. Oh, so let's say you want to have, or vice versa. You're not into have. She wants to have. She's a mother. She has that motherly instinct. She wants to have 15, and you want to have 5 or 6. You know, you also want to have a life, and it's expensive, and it's hard for you, whatever it might be. So I'm not telling you how many children to want. I'm pro-creation. Yes? But, it should be clarified. But then when you come into marriage, you say, listen, Rabbanu Shalom, this is what I want, but maybe you're not going to get it. Because some women don't have such an easy time getting pregnant. And some women, every time they give birth, so it's like sarcomas nefashis for them. And then sometimes the doctor says, you know, you got to go easy on this one. You don't know what it's going to be. You don't know how a woman gives birth until after she starts. So you have to come in with reasonable expectations. You can doubt them for the best, but expect whatever the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you. That applies to that. And that really applies to really every area of your life. You know, let's say the way she keeps the home and cooks and things like that. You walk into the marriage saying, I am 100% willing to order Chinese every night. I'm willing to order French, Italian. As a matter of fact, you can do the whole, all the colors of the rainbow, all of the flags and the Benetton thing or whatever it is with all the faces. I still have that advertisement with all the different faces from all the countries. So one night you can eat Haiti, one night you can eat, you know, Thailand. Every night you can eat from another. But if she doesn't know how to cook, it won't bother me at all. Right? She's not my slave. Recently somebody told me an interesting story, and he was engaged, and the girl said to him, you know, she was nervous whether she would perform as a wife. So she said, what happens if I don't have dinner ready for you, you know, every night when you come home? So he said, listen, you know, what I understood that he said, and he's a sweet guy inside it, but he said, you know, I'd appreciate dinner, you know, ready when I get home, but if it's not ready, you know, obviously it should be made soon after, right? So what I would have said, and first of all, you want to calm the girl's fears, you say, no, no, it's fine, whatever you do is fine. But even from my own perspective, not only make her feel good, say, listen, you don't want to make dinner, then we'll just order out. That's all. That's your expectation. And then you get married, and you come home after the first week, right, because the first week you're home, because you don't work for Shabbat brachos, plus people are giving you meals for the first week. But on the 8th day of your marriage, Shmini Lamila, right, it's not painful. You come home, and all of a sudden you have dinner waiting for you. You have dinner waiting. What do? You jump through the roof. You say, this is an unbelievable deal. She made me dinner. Oh my gosh. Now I'm willing to order. They have so many, you know, from kosher takeout places they have. Also, you guys are like American. So you don't even have to worry about Shemitah. You can just order, you know, OU, wherever you go, takeout. That's it. I'm willing to buy takeout. She made me dinner. Oh my gosh. And then you know what? She's going to do it again. And then you're like, I can't. This is the most amazing thing in the world. You don't have to do this for me. And the same thing goes for your laundry. Now, I don't know too many homes where the man does 51% of the laundry. Right? Usually it's the woman either doing 100%, which is in cases where, like say, for example, a guy who lives in my apartment doesn't even know how to work the washing machine. And fortunately, it's written in German, so he has a good excuse. Okay? All the words there are in German. Unfortunately, I understand some Yiddish, and a lot of the German words are like Yiddish words, but he doesn't let on that he knows. So he doesn't really know how to... So, now, you know, you can send your beforehand we were getting all cosmopolitan and international, you can send your clothing to a laundromat. Excuse me, what does she have to clean your yellow armpits for? Right? You got these smelly armpits that she's throwing. What does she have to do? She doesn't have to do that. Right? You can send it to a Chinese laundromat. And you know the guy who goes to the Chinese laundromat, he gives in his tzitzis, you know, and he charged him $35 to clean the tzitzis. So he says, $35, that's a lot of money for one garment. The guy said, yeah, but it wasn't easy untying all those knots. So you're willing to go to a laundromat. And now she does your laundry. You can't contain yourself. You start dancing around her. You start dancing around her like mamish, like a kala b'yom kupasa. You say, you're the most amazing woman in the world. Because I came into this marriage fully expecting. Now obviously, a woman has to do some things for her husband. But you're going to let her decide what she, because every woman has things they like to do and things they don't like to do. Some women love to cook, don't like to do laundry. Some women are laundry oriented, don't like to be in the kitchen. Some women aren't so homey at all. There are those women who don't like to do anything in the home, and they like to pay the housekeeper. That's the housework they like to do, to pay the housekeeper. And there are some women who are, very good in the kitchen and very good with the laundry, but they're not so good with the food. Meaning, well, the food would be a contradiction. They're not so good with the laundry. I said they are good with the laundry. They're not so good with the kitchen, the food. There's plenty of things to do. Cleaning, that's what I meant. I kept trying to think of that, and it kept escaping my brain and into my brain. They don't clean so well. So now that you're going to have clean clothes, you're going to have delicious food, but you're going to be living like in a guy's dormitory. It's going to be a little bit of a pigsty. Right? Because, you know, it keeps getting messy, and then she's going to say to you, why are your socks piling up, and why are they with it? And you're going to explain to her, listen, if you were a boy, and you'd have lived like me for the last few years, then you'd appreciate that this is the way men live. But you're a girl, and girls have everything eaten clean, usually. So you don't appreciate it as much, but this is the way I am. And then you're going to keep making a mess, and she's going to keep cleaning it up, and she's going to complain, and then, but she just can't keep on top of it. She doesn't like it. She doesn't enjoy the cleaning. So that's what, you know, so you say, listen, I'm not expecting the house to be clean. And if you can't live in a dirty house, then what are you going to do? You have two options. One, take a broom in hand. Yes? Two, you know the famous story? I don't know if it's true, but they tell it, so I like it. About a Mordechai Gifter. Mordechai Gifter was a Rosh Hashiva of Telz. So a husband and wife once came to him, and they had a big argument, and they wanted the Rosh Hashiva to pass him. Because he said that it's beneath his dignity to take out the garbage. And she said that she needs help in the house. You know, she's got little children. She wants to take out the garbage. And he said, I'm a Ben Torah, and B'nai Torah, don't take out garbage. Maybe the Kohen Gadol, Otzos Hadeshin. You know, he takes out the ashes from the Beis HaMikdash. But the taking out garbage stam is beneath my dignity. And she said, but I need help. So they went to the Rosh Hashiva, and the Rosh Hashiva passed him that he's right. If he believes that it's beneath his dignity, he doesn't have to take out the garbage. Because he's a person who learns Torah, and garbage is all yucky and smelling. Good. So she started to cry, and she's holding in her tears, but if that's what the Rosh Hashiva Paskin, that's what the Rosh Hashiva Paskin. So the next morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden there's a knock at his door, and he comes running to the door in his pajamas. He doesn't know could possibly knock him so early. And who does he see? The Rosh Hashiva. And the Rosh Hashiva said to him, I have come to take out your garbage. It's not beneath my dignity. And I think with that, the lesson was learned, and he started to take out the garbage himself. But the point is that if you don't expect, then everything she does will make you so happy. If you start coming with expectations, that is the nekuda. That is the point where all of the problems will begin. Because you're expecting, and you're not receiving, clash. But when you're not expecting, there are two possibilities. Either you're not going to get it, which is exactly what you were expecting. So, fine. I wasn't expecting to get it. Is anyone here expecting me to do their laundry? Well, now that I told you I don't know how to use my machine, no. But nobody's ever been upset at me for not doing... So, you're not expecting me, you're not upset at me. Yes? But if the kitchen staff doesn't make dinner tonight, how do you feel? Ooh, not everybody's so happy. Not everybody is so happy. Why? Because those are your expectations. The lower your expectations, the more likely they are to be satisfied. Now, let's say you don't expect and you do receive. So you gain two things. You got what you wanted, and also you have tremendous hakaras hatov to her. Because I wasn't expecting this. This is like a complete surprise. There's a very important problem in marriage. And that is that people don't appreciate what they think they deserve, what they think is coming to them. Like a woman, very often, will not appreciate the fact that her husband supports her. and she's going to make a lot more demands. Recently, a close friend of mine told me that his wife got very upset because she feels he doesn't help enough around the home. So she said to him something to the effect of, "You do nothing except support the family." Now, if somebody would come up to me and tell me that they will pay my rent, feed me, clothe me, pay for my transportation, everything on them for my whole life, how would I feel towards that person? Very good. Very good. You know what I would do? I would give him a kiss and I would just call him Ira for fun. That's a good deal! Right? But a woman can't appreciate that. You know why? Because he has to. He has to. So that he has to do, but what's he doing around? And also, by the way, if your wife ever says to you, "You do nothing," a lot of times she's speaking and you're going to start telling her all the things you do. But people tend to exaggerate, especially when they're angry. So she doesn't really mean that. She means that you're not fulfilling my expectations. Now, she hasn't been to this class, so if she were, then Yemirtz Hashem, you'll give her the tape, and she'll listen to it, and then she'll lower her expectations of you. I was speaking to girls. I didn't tell her what I even have told them. I said, expect your husband to do absolutely nothing in the house. Nothing. That's not his job. It's completely on you. And then, if he ever even picks up his dinner plate to give it to you, to bring it to the kitchen, then you'll be very, oh, you did something. That's more than I expected. Yes? And not that I would tell guys not to help, but that I would tell the girls not to expect him to help. But as far as, now that I'm talking to you guys, no, I'm just giving you this example. That's what she said, but she can't be appreciative of that, because that's what he has to do. He has to support her. What would she appreciate if he does something that he doesn't have to do? And that's what she's looking for. It's the same thing with the guy. You're not going to appreciate her. You should. But generally, guys aren't appreciating their wives for what they have to do, because that's her job. Like, she has to walk around for 9 months with a fetus. Now, has anyone ever tried that? So, a guy once did on television. And he put, like, a basketball in his shirt, and he walked around with it for the whole day. And, like, at the end of the day, he was zapped. He was like, first of all, how many people try to make this steal? You know, they try to snatch the ball away. That didn't make life any easier. But at the end of the day, that was a joke that I added in. At the end of the day, the guy was zonked, walking around all day with this heavy thing inside of him. And also, it causes all these hormonological changes in the woman's body. And it's a foreign object. It's not her. But we're putting aside, the girl doesn't know the lambdas. All she knows is there's this big pack of meat inside of her, and it's weighing her down, and it makes her tired, and it makes her nauseous. But we don't appreciate that, because that's her job in this world. What was Chava's name? Chavaki and Kolchai. You're a mother. That's your job. So a guy can't appreciate that. You say, no. If need be, if she can't, so I'll adopt a child from Brazil. You go to Brazil, you write out a check for $75,000, and you bring home a nice, handsome, dark-skinned little boy, 4 years old. His name was Jose, and now you're going to call him Yossi. Okay? You like that? Good? Right? He moved from Yemen to Brazil, to Englewood, and to Jerusalem. Okay? So you call him Yossi, and you go, wait. You're going to have a biological child with me? This is the most unbelievable thing in the world. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for every minute of every day. Oh, by the way, there are no breaks. You know, men, we get breaks. Whatever we're doing, we get breaks. But you don't get a break. It's 9 months straight. If a woman gets a break during the 9 months from the pregnancy, that means it's all over. So she does it, like, wow, that is amazing. And this applies to every area of your life. You have to remember, so since you guys are older, we can talk about it. Men have very strong sexual urges. Men are denied the right to fulfill these urges because God said, be a human being and don't be a behemoth gasa. So that means you can only do it with your wife, and you can only be with her at certain times. Now, usually the difference between a man and a woman is that she only wants it at certain times, and he often wants it at all times. That's usually the way what it comes down to. He wants it, obviously I'm exaggerating slightly, but only slightly. He will often want to be with her a lot more than she will want to be with him. Okay? Because that's the way God created us, and that's the way God created her. So you say like this. You say, listen, I could be single. Now, if you're single, nothing at all. Very hard. So, I'm married. Now, if you're married, there's a chiyuv. Every time there's a mikvah, there's a chiyuv. So, that's already once a month. Or twice a month. Then, every time there is, well, depends how often it comes out. But once or twice a month, let's say. And every time it's Friday night, there's also a special mitzvah. So let's just say, the minimal mitzvahs. No hinder mitzvah, you know, Iker Adin is one candle. Mahadrin is, you know, Ner Rukon Echa Be'efa. And then, Mahadrin, you want to do Mahadrin, then Mahadrin, you know, Kenega Kobani Abayitz. But she is, so, a lot of times that causes conflict. But it doesn't have to cause conflict. Because you can say, I'm starting out with zero, and every time I get it, I am so thankful. I am so thankful because this is a need that I have, and she is the only one who can help me fulfill the need. And now she does. So I'm feeling grateful. And not to start thinking the opposite way. This is the way guys usually think. They think, I'm married. She's my wife. Now she is mishuabedes to me. She is bound to me to be my partner. And if she's not interested when I'm interested, so oy vavoy. So again, you just come in with the minimal amount of expectations, and then you are almost definitely guaranteed a life filled with simcha. And this goes, what was another example that I was thinking of that comes up with my very often? Oh, money. What is the number one issue about which couples fight? How did you guys guess? Right? Money. So go into marriage assuming that your job is to earn as much money as you possibly can, and her job is to see how fast you can spend it. And then you won't have fights. And you're going to say, yeah, but I can't afford this, and you're going to be angry at her for buying it. So, you don't have to. You can go into the marriage knowing that you're going to work hard, you're going to be making $1,000 a week, and she's going to be spending $1,200 a week. No, seriously. And you're going to say, but I don't understand. We can't afford this. What are you doing? And she says, yeah, but I need new shoes. But you bought shoes last week. Well, that's exactly the point. They're not new anymore. I need new shoes, right? And oh, and I have nothing to wear. Do you know, I always like to quote Rav Shaloni's grandfather's joke. Rav Shaloni's grandfather tells about how Adam and Chava were in Gan Eden, and Adam and Chava eat from the tree of knowledge, good and bad, and all of a sudden Chava finds herself naked, right? They knew they were naked, and since then, women have had nothing to wear. So you're going to walk, it could very well be, you walk into the closet, and you see hundreds upon hundreds of outfits. Okay? You look into your own closet, and you see, depends, if you're yeshivish, you see two white shirts, one for Shabbos and one for the weekday, and two pairs of dark pants. That's all you have. You're a little bit more modern, so you see three shirts. You know, you have a blue, and you have a striped, you know, white and blue, and then you have a white for Shabbos. Okay? And then you have two or three pairs of pants, you know, a little bit of underwear, undershirt, and then nothing. Like, you can all put it in one little, what do they call it? In Hebrew Israel, they call them teak James Bond. You know, those black briefcases. They call them James Bond briefcases. You can fit it all. I'm saying if you were going to go on a business trip, like men go on a business trip, I'm saying you can fit in, you can go on a weekend a business trip, you can fit in all the clothing that you own, you know, your tefillin, your talis, Rashi tefillin, Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, your toothpaste, you know, two or three big English art school gemaras, you can fit it all into the briefcase. And whereas this woman, I'm saying she keeps buying, and this happens all the time, right? She and it doesn't matter who. I'm not only talking about women who are very, what they call high maintenance, which I'm not going to say not to marry high maintenance. I say not to marry a woman whose focus is going to be on her career. I'm not going to say not to marry high maintenance. High maintenance means that she has a lot of demands. She likes to go on vacations, and she likes to buy expensive things, and she likes to have a nice car, etc., etc., and a nice house, and she's always redoing the house. So you can marry one, but just make sure you're going to be able to afford her. Okay? If you can afford her, adarabba. But if you can't afford her, then don't marry her in the first place. And find out in advance. You can see the way she lives now, and you can find out when you're dating what her expectations are. But she has so much clothing, and then she tells you she has nothing to wear. And you say, I don't understand. What does that mean? Well, look into your closet. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you open up another, 12, 19, 20. I've already counted 36 outfits, and I've just begun. I'm saying you walk everywhere in the house. There's, you're, you know, you have little closets with more and more clothing. So she says, no. This doesn't fit me anymore. This is out of style. This I never really liked in the first place. This. And at the end of the day, she likes to have new clothing. Women like new clothing. That's like, it makes them feel special. So she's going to want to go and buy, and you're going to want to make a fight. So my wife always quotes one of her teachers that she went to for, like, you know, Shalom Bayis classes and parenting classes. She said it good for it. She said that if you fight about money, it's going to end up costing you a lot more money than what the wife is actually spending. Why? Because then you're going to have to go to marital therapy. Right? How much does a therapist cost for 1 hour? I'm sure no one in this room has ever been to one. But let's just assume that maybe you have. And you'll know that today it goes for, at least in America, in the average, $250 for an average therapist. I'm not talking about the top. The top, you got to pay a lot more. But you, for the average therapist, I don't want to offend anybody. You think, oh, my therapist is only average. It's only $250. But that's the going rate. So you're going to be spending $250 an hour. Okay? You're going to be miserable. You're going to have to do this for many hours. Why? Because you blew up at her when she once bought a dress for $250. Right? This is not worth it. So what do you do? Like, and I think the story is in Generation to Generation, which I quoted last week, a couple once went to a rav and they were having serious Shalom Bayis problems. So he said, well, what was the problem? The problem was that in her house, they always served the kugel at the end of the meal. The end of the meal, they served the kugel, right before the dessert. At his house, growing up, they always served the kugel at the beginning of the meal. And they couldn't decide when to serve the kugel. And it was making, because this is a minhag, the minhag is very holy, it was making very serious problems in the relationship. So the rav said, well, passing like the husband, and you have to serve the kugel at the beginning of the meal. However, you also have to serve kugel at the end of the meal. And that kugel will call the Shalom Bayis kugel. And that's going to make peace in the home. This way, the woman doesn't have a minhag not to serve at the beginning, that's not a problem. So you can serve at the beginning of the meal. And then at the end of the meal, you have a Shalom Bayis kugel. So I've heard of people who have Shalom Bayis money. Right? You have money set aside, you say, listen, we're going to spend this amount of money, and it's going to be overspent, and it's going to be wasteful, but it's worth it for Shalom Bayis for a few reasons. A, because it's good to have Shalom Bayis. And B, even just financially, it's going to end up costing you a lot more, because if you don't have a happy marriage, then you're going to end up spending on marital therapy, and the money's going to go anyway. So you just go in advance. You say, my expectations are that she is going to spend more money than we have. Very simply. Now let's say she doesn't. There are women who don't. There are women who are willing to be budgeted, and they say, the husband says, we have this and this amount for you to spend every week, and they keep to it. So if they keep to it, what do? You make a big seuda, that money that you had saved up for your Shalom Bayis money, you have a big seuda, and you don't have to tell them why, you invite all your friends, and you make a big party that you have such a wife. But you're probably not going to get one. It's very likely that you're going to get a wife who's going to spend on things that you're not interested in spending on, and you're going to think are wasteful. Right? And it could be that you're going to spend on things that she thinks is wasteful. Right? She's going to say, why exactly do we need a subscription to Sports Illustrated every year? Like, wouldn't the money go better on something else? But maybe you like Sports Illustrated, and maybe she likes new shoes. She already has 12 pairs. Right? I don't know how many pairs of shoes you guys have. But it's very hard for me to believe that you're going to have more than your future wife. Yes, women have different pairs of shoes. They have to match it with their clothing. We don't have a problem. We get Crocs. Yes, those called Crocs. No. What are they? Na'ot. Yeah. We have na'ot. But there. So you just come with expectations. She is going to buy things that I think are wasteful. She is going to want to go on vacation, maybe when I don't want to go. And you drop in 1 week. What's a vacation? 20 grand. Could be. So she is going to want to redo the kitchen. Wait. The kitchen looks just fine. What does the kitchen need? The sink? We have a sink. A fridge? Fridge. Cabinets? No, but they're old. Yeah, but they work. You don't need a cabinet to be young. You want a young, pretty wife. You don't need a young, pretty cabinet. Right? And anyway, you say to her, you're going to get old, so why should you expect any less from the cabinets? No! Leave your funny jokes to yourself. I don't know. Because I think of things sometimes, I have to decide what funny things to say and what funny things not to say. So, anyway, the point is that it's all a matter, my sweetest friends, of expectations. And that think of it every area. Now, when you get married, you're still going to have expectations, okay? But what I want you to do is adjust them, okay? When you go, I mean, nobody told me this before I got married, but I know that I've done this. This has contributed to my own personal happiness in life, probably more than almost anything else, if not more than anything else. I just readjusted my expectations. I said, I know coming in, I wanted A, B, C, and D. But now I see, now obviously you get to know your wife better after you're married to her. Now I'm going to reassess. I'm going to see what she's actually able to give me. And I know that she is always going to make Shabbos. No matter what. Most women are very good about that. They make Shabbos. Okay? So I know that. So all I'm expecting for her is Shabbos. She doesn't make food during, by the way, just to make it clear so my wife doesn't look bad, this is not at all biographical. I don't ask my wife to prepare my food. I basically live on rice cakes. So there's not much you can compare about rice cakes. You just go to the Makola. I have a very limited diet. So if anyone's thinking that I'm talking from personal experience, Chas v'shalom. But I know other men are very machbid about the food. So you say, coming in, you say, all I expect is that she make me a very simple Shabbos meal. That's all. And during the week, if she makes good, and if not, you can, I'll just order out. It'll cost me, you can get all the today, you can get for very cheap. If you go into the fridge, you have a full fridge, all these different types of foods. She's not my slave. Right? Everything she gives you, same thing with, you know, personality-wise. I'm coming into marriage knowing that sometimes it's going to be fun to be with her, and sometimes it's not going to be fun to be with her. That's the way women are. When you're married to somebody, they're not. It's not always lots and lots of fun. It's the way men are also. We know that we're not. Are we always so much fun? We're always cheerful and happy, and everybody wants to be with us? No! We have our mood swings, and we don't have the hormonal changes that women have. Right? So women have, let's say you're married to three women. You're married to, in her regular state, when she's having her period, and when she's pregnant. Okay? And then she has the pressure of raising children. And then she has being a woman, which means that she's has very strong emotions. And the seichel isn't always in charge. So I know in advance, sometimes she's going to be a lot of fun to be with. But sometimes, it's not going to be as much fun. It's like lahavdil, 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 but you go to Hass. Right? Do you expect, if you're going to be in counselor in Hass, are you going to expect the same of your campers that you would if you'd be a counselor in Morisha? Come on guys, let's get up for Minya now. Yeah, but you can't get up. Right, imagine you're a counselor in Morisha, the 15-year-old kid calls to you from the bathroom, and he says, yo, counselor, can you wipe me? Like, there'll just be silence, and you're just not going to know how to react. And then you'll just say, no, I'm not going to wipe you. Help yourself. You lost your brain? You're crazy? You know, you're going to quickly call the kid's mother. You said, your kid, he went off the deep end. But if you go to Camp Hass, you don't wait for the kid to ask you to wipe him. You wipe him yourself. Right? Because that's your expectation. You know going into Camp Hass that you're going to be wiping little, you know, people's tushies. Adults' tushies. So if that's your expectation, you don't have a problem. Not only don't you have a problem with it, you like it. Wow, this is my job, because you're feeling a fulfillment. But if you go in expecting that he's going to wipe himself, and then all of a sudden you get to camp, and you start having to do it, and sometimes the toilet paper rips, and when you're doing it, this isn't what I expected. So then you get very upset. It's the exact, again, Mahavdiya, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not comparing a wife, Chas v'Shalom, to a Hass camp. But it's the same thing with a wife. If you come in expecting very little, and then the more you get, the happier you're going to be, but you're not going to come with complaints. You don't have any complaints against her because you didn't expect it in the first place. But the higher your expectations are, the more disappointed you're going to be. And I want you to apply this also until you're married, and even after you're married, to every area of your life. Don't expect your parents to be lower. Now that you know your parents, reassess your expectations of them, and then you won't be disappointed. You say, I know my mom will do A, B, and C for me, and my dad D, E, and F. And that's what but more than that, even though you want more from your parents than they're able to give you, or willing to give you, whatever it might be, you're not angry at them, because you're not expecting anymore. I'm happy I have a living father. That's it. And all you expect him is to be alive, you're definitely not going to be disappointed as long as he's alive. And then afterwards, you can't have complaints against him, because it's not his fault. Right? But you're happy. And it's the same thing with your friends. You know, in relationships, we have expectations with our friends. Right? Why doesn't he do this for me, or from our Rabbeim? Right? I have a Rebbe, so a lot of people have, oh, why doesn't he, spend more time with me after the shiur, or why isn't he this, or why isn't he that? Listen, First you see who he is, make proper expectations, knowing that they're going to be fulfilled, and then anything more that he gives you, you'll be happy with. And if you do this in every area of your life, and we'll conclude with the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? We have expectations of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we say that he has to give me A, B, and C. And if we would just lower expectations and say, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't have to give me anything, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't have to give me life. How much did I pay for my life? Nothing. So I got it completely for free. Okay? My arms came free, my legs came. You ever try to buy an arm? Go online, go to eBay and try to buy an arm. So maybe you'll Google arms and then you'll get for guns and for all these weapons. But I'm not talking about arms, I'm talking about an arm. How much a good arm, how much you can get a good arm for on eBay? You can't. You can't get a good arm. I know in Iraq they're selling kidneys, I think at about $4,500 a piece. That's what I heard. You have a kidney. You know, there are people who are selling kidneys, buying kidneys. You have the whole market over there. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you 2 free kidneys. He gave you lungs. He gave you an eye. He gave you a mouth. He gave you a nose. He gave you ears. He gave you so many different... You didn't pay. You didn't do anything to deserve it. He gave it to you as a complete gift. And now what do? We say, yeah, Ribbono Shel Olam, but it's not enough. It's not enough. You also have to give me. And we have a whole list of demands. And then when he doesn't fulfill them, we say, excuse me, sir, but did you hear me? I asked you 4 times already. I already asked you 4 times that I want X. So he said, no. Baruch Shalom, you gave me life. That's all. Yasor Yisranika V'lamaves Lonesananika. Do whatever you want to me, David HaMelech said. Just don't kill me. And then if he does, he has a right to do that also. It's not your life. And he said, oh, I have hands! I have food to eat! You're the happiest man in the world. You take this, you're sorry. Just readjust your expectations, lower them, make sure they're going to be fulfilled, you'll be a happy man. My sweetest friends, if you follow this lesson, I guarantee you a life of serving Hashem. The same thing. 2, 3, 4.